notebooks and news beats, hear that piano rail. Take down the facts, Ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace, trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. I'm Dan Gowerthy, and I'm here with my radio partner,
Tom Nato.
And thanks for joining us today. We broadcast from the facilities, the beautiful facilities at KRBS 107.1 in Oroville, California. And our program, Left Turn on Bird Street, is also heard on WCRV in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, as well as 106.1 FM KQRP in Salida, California. So thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. So, Tom, what are we going to talk about today?
All the Fitz that's the others wouldn't print.
Yeah, that's right. Fitzgerald, as in Patrick Fitzgerald. So what's going on with him right now, Tom?
Not so much since he let everybody off but Scooter Libby.
Yeah, that's very convenient. Just let off, Scooter Libby looks like he's the only one who's, for now anyhow, that's taking the brunt of the leak in the Valerie Plame case. So a lot of people have different theories on this, and naturally, Tom and I have some theories on this. So
actually, three.
Three. Okay. What are the four theories? Well, let's for our listeners, let's rattle off to the best of your memory, anyhow, because I have no memory of what the three or four theories are, Tom.
Well, let's see. One is that Fitzgerald is a stooge. He's been fixed. The results are that's you.
Yeah, that's me. That's what I think.
Others say that he's a stealth prosecutor. He's doing this. He's got it up his sleeve. It's really going to go further. He's just a quiet guy, and he's just sticking by the law.
That's number two. What's number three?
That's not me.
That's not you. I know that's not you.
I think that he's testing the waters. As he's getting the public reaction to what he's done so far, analyzing that and saying, well, it looks like I can go further without ruining my career.
So you think... So what do you think he's thinking? I mean,
I think
it's hard to. You're never supposed to do this. Never say what do you think he's thinking. But what do you think he's thinking?
Well, I think he's thinking this: if the audience applauds,
right,
we're going to go on with the show. If there's little or no applause, or if it looks like the reaction from the side I fear most, the Republican side, he won't go on. That would overpower it. He wouldn't go further.
Okay, so let's take your theory here, and it brings up a point. So right now, in the immediate aftermath of the Libby indictment and the whole investigation, if you can use this as a gauge of the popularity with the public, Bush's approval ratings are at his all-time lows for him. Cheney actually has lower approval rating than wife abusers, if you can believe that. But, you know, seriously, I read that on the internet.
So because everybody knows he's the president.
Right. So, but if we're to use Bush's approval ratings, his very low approval ratings in with the public, would you view that as a affirmation to Fitzgerald that he should proceed with his investigation? How do you gauge it? I mean, how do you gauge what he's going to gauge?
Well, how many times have you read stories that characterize him as cautious?
Yes, very much.
And tight-lipped. And that's what I think is he's just checking things out. But that would be another plus for going ahead, because it's easy to kick a guy who's down.
Okay.
It's harder to kick somebody who's up.
Okay, so let's expand
kick
on
up,
that. Yeah, let's expand on that.
Down.
So Bush's popularity, his approval ratings are going down quickly for just a variety of different reasons, one of which is this.
Well, I think this is going on right here. Jimmy Hoffa had this thing pretty well figured out. What is there to be gained and what is there to be lost?
Right.
He's doing it this way so that he can get an idea of what's there to be gained and what is there to be lost for his purposes.
So do you think he's going to, so from your perspective, do you think that there's going to be further indictments? Is this going to unravel thing for Bush or what?
A little bit more testing. Mm-hmm. Maybe like one more indictment. Hey, if there's applause there, maybe like three. I don't think that this guy is a slam bang, thank you very much, ma'am, kind of guy.
I don't know. I'm going to differ with you on this a little bit. And I guess, Tom, you're actually taking a more optimistic view on this. I'm taking a somewhat pessimistic view. First of all, as far as Scooter Lewis Libby goes, I think before he goes to trial, he was indicted this week, and a trial date, I believe, of February 3rd, 2006 was set. So that's 3 months from now, and he pled not guilty, so that means there's going to be, as it stands now, a trial of some sort. I think between now and then, first of all, I think he's gonna cop a plea. I don't think he's going to have a lot of pressure on him from a lot of different people. They're going to say, hey, look it, take this couple million dollars, go away, take the plea. We'll get you a suspended sentence, probation, and you'll get your wrist slapped on. You'll collect a fat government pension. You have a couple million dollars and just get away. Because the last thing the Bush administration wants, and the last thing Dick Cheney wants to, believe me, the last thing Dick Cheney wants to do is testify in a criminal trial. And I think
this thing is
going to happen in February. That just means it's going to start. And there's going to be awesome. You know, Tom, you're a court reporter. You know, even on an ordinary person who goes to criminal trial, there's usually all sorts of pretrial motions, hearings. This thing might not the real trial might not even start until sometime in April, maybe May. And so this thing could linger out through the summer. It could be a big political liability. So there's going to be tremendous pressure on Libby to cop a plea.
No, they'll either want it to go right now, fast, so they can get it out of the way and then do the repair work,
right,
or they'll try to drag it out past the next election in 2006. They got a lot of Republican candidates out there who also got their fingers up in the wind, and so that's what I think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not the only one. John Dean had a kind of a special twist on it.
Right.
And he's a columnist now, though. He was the attorney.
Special counsel for Richard Nixon.
Turned state's evidence against Nixon.
He famously told Nixon that there was a cancer on the presidency.
Right. Anyway, so his last column, the one before this one right now, had it figured that, slap on the wrist or nothing at all. He was, now that there actually were indictments, he's saying, well, this is very interesting. It may go like this. And he said just what I said about the trying not to have this happen before the election.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's saying that, well, they're going to look at the results of the next election. If they lose control of the House or the Senate,
right,
what they'll do then is Cheney will suddenly retire for health reasons.
Right. Right.
And that'll remove the target for all this, and then everything will seem unimportant because, you know, the main guy's gone.
Right. Well, just as a side note to that, I've long before this came out, I've had a theory on Dick Cheney. I think because Cheney has announced well into even Bush's first term that he had no aspirations to become the presidential nominee for the Republicans, and historically the vice presidential the vice president has been a pretty good launching pad the last 40 years for nominees for the respective parties. If Cheney doesn't run, they'll want to get somebody in there that they can elect as a president. And it would be, I'll tell you, if it does happen, it would be 1 year and 364 days when he resigns or a new president's approved, because constitutionally somebody could become president for 10 years.
Yeah, that's a good angle.
And
but
I've always thought it was
Cheney
just for that reason.
Never run. They said this from the beginning. That, remember, he was the one that was vetting the potential candidates for
Right.
and decided that
it's a pretty good job. I got a lot of power here.
I know honey bot when I see it.
Right.
And so he made himself vice president. I recommend that I'm the best candidate.
Right.
And there's what I think is that at the time they said that because he has a bad heart,
right,
he's a pacemaker, doesn't he?
Right. He has a pacemaker.
And that he's pretty much, everybody's agreed that he couldn't run for president because
right,
health would become too much of an
right,
issue. That would be why they'd use the health factor as
right,
a reason. It would be no surprise to the public
right,
or to those that can remember. And so I don't think he's going to be a candidate in any case.
Right. I think even with the vote rigging going on, I don't even think he could get elected.
Yeah, if they can stay to the end of term, which I'm not sure they can do anymore,
right?
Then they will have accomplished everything for business they wanted to accomplish.
Right.
And so why even worry about the next one? They'll just they're on the gravy train and it won't stop.
Right. Well, getting back to the Fitzgerald, Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor in the Valerie Plame case, you know, like, I'll say I've said it once, and I've said it a dozen times on our show here. I don't think this thing will go to trial, and I've been wrong several times. But I think, but like this, I won't be surprised if he cops a plea before the trial, because regardless of the timing, like you're saying, Tom, of when it goes on, when that thing goes to trial, even if it goes beyond the election time, that is just a huge liability sitting out there for them. And there's going to be tremendous pressure on this and on Lewis Libby. So
well, I want to go back to John W. Dean again, who's written a column for FindLaw.com.
Right.
And besides what I already said, in thinking that the way it would go, he's also, as a lead, saying, will Libby flip?
Now, turn state's evidence?
It's unlikely, he says. Neither Cheney nor Libby, I believe, that him believes, will be so foolish as to crack a deal. You're saying maybe a deal. And Libby probably, and no doubt correctly, assumes that Cheney, a former boss with whom he has a close relationship, will, at the right time and place, help Libby out.
It could be.
Either with a pardon or financially.
Right.
You brought up the financial aspects of it.
Right.
If necessary, Libby's goal, meanwhile, will be to stall going to trial as long as possible so as not to hurt Republicans' showing in the 2006 elections. So, if Libby can take the heat for a time, he and his former boss and friend may get through this. But should Republicans lose control of the Senate, where they are blocking all oversight of this administration, I predict, John predicts, Cheney will resign for health reasons. That's where I got my idea.
Well, that's, you know, that certainly has some plausibility to it. But I still think that this thing is never going to go to trial. He's going to plead to something. He'll get a 6 months in Club Fed or something like that, and he'll go off. He'll walk away into the background with millions of dollars become a talk show host. I guarantee you, this guy will become a right wing talk show host. He's got the credentials. He'll have been a convicted felon, right? So he can be a right wing, and he'll be a convicted felon or a drug addict to be a right wing or a liar. One of those three, and I think he's going to have at least two of them. So he'll become a right wing talk host. But my point is, in all seriousness, they're not going to let this thing go to trial.
I was just watching a movie about a New Republic writer. They call them reporters, but it's a magazine. It's a writer,
right,
who did everything unethical that a reporter is supposed to do.
Right.
Got fired, then got a book contract.
Right.
I'm not doing this right, Dan.
Tom, we're not doing this right. We need to get in some reputable big news organization, do something totally unethical, get fired, and that's how we become a best-selling author. We'll get our names on the New York Times best-selling list.
Rob a bank. Go to college.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, anyway, there's one other angle to this that I haven't seen mentioned anyplace, and I want to put in. They're running against the clock with Bush's mental stability.
Mm-hmm.
That is a wrinkle that they're not considering.
Right.
It's showing up in a few articles we'll get into a little bit later.
Right.
That he's starting to show signs of crumbling.
Right.
And when that happens, that may change the whole scenario for what's going on. Sorry for him. Glad to get rid of him. Well, why do we want to bother with Cheney and all that stuff? It may, the way Nixon upstaged everybody by retiring. Resigning. Nobody thought that. We're expecting to follow the procedures as laid down in the Constitution.
Right.
Well, he out-nixed them.
Yeah, that's true. That's a possibility. Well, there's one other theory out there that I found on the internets about Fitzgerald, and it's from a Rory O'Connor's blog, and the title of the story is Mr. Inside Goes to Washington. You can find this on the internet at roryoconnor.org. Basically, O'Connor points out in his story that the appointment of Fitzgerald, who is a federal prosecutor from Chicago, violates the rule that, and he cites the specific rule, that independent investigators should be from outside the government. And
Dan, rules, schmools. I mean,
rules. I don't need
torturing people.
We're
in permanent detention. Yeah, right. I mean, what the Constitution says is abrogated.
Right. Jeez, how silly of me, Tom. Who follows the
rules?
You're
worried about some little, sidebar rules in the federal right. Prosecutor's Code.
Well, but the point being is, he does a pretty good job of laying out his argument. His argument is that this is an insider's job. The person who appointed Fitzgerald was Assistant Attorney General to then Attorney General Ashcroft. This person whose name is, I got these bifocals. I'm really having trouble with these. I'm still doing it the old-fashioned way here. James Comey, who was acting on behalf of then Attorney General. Then Attorney General John Ashcroft, who recused himself because Ashcroft had past ties to presidential advisor Karl Rove. Now, Comey is a old colleague of Fitzgerald, and they work.
Everybody's in bed together.
Everybody's in bed with
everybody's
one another.
Connected. Well, at least something is that, what's her name? McCallan, or what was the wife, the columnist to Carville's wife?
Oh, Mary Matlin.
Mary Matlin, yeah. She's an advisor to.
Right.
But she was a columnist. But
right. No, but Rory O'Connor's point is that Fitzgerald was appointed by a crony of his, and it was kind of on, he alleges that it's on the QT, that kind of unspoken, that he can go there and do a little bit of an investigation, and he points out, rightly so, he points out in his investigation, that really what they got Libby on, Louis Libby, is not, and this still cuts to the heart of the matter, nobody has been indicted for actually leaking the name of Valerie Plame.
Was lying about leaking.
Right, it was lying to a grand jury. This is what, it's like kind of like the Al Capone prosecution. They can never get Capone on murder, but man, he started screwing with taxes and they got him on taxes. Well, same thing with this.
Because if you go down that road instead of the other road, it has a dead end.
Right.
An end to it. But if you start going into cooking it up, then you start looking out for more people and they don't want to go down that way.
Right. And the last few shows, my theory, in the last few shows of Left Turn on Bird Street, my theory with Fitzgerald has been that he's going to be under tremendous pressure not to hand down major indictments. And like you said, an obstruction of justice or perjury, they could conceivably convict him. But you're right, it doesn't open a lot of other doors. Nobody has been indicted for who leaked the name of Valerie Plame.
What's missing from that, besides the Plame angle, is the where this stuff, who got it started?
Who
authorized it?
Who originated it?
And if he is in trouble for lying about it, then Bush should be in trouble for lying about it, because he's not lying he didn't know, because he lied it didn't happen, and he lying he was going to do something about it.
Right. Well, I guess to sum up my feelings on this, you're more optimistic than I am, Thomas.
And this is one time when I'm not optimistic so much as more cynical than you are.
Yeah, well, maybe. I'm very cynical about this. I think the same thing that's going to happen with this is going to be Libby. He'll cop a plea, and they're going to have a financial arrangement. Last day of Bush's presidency, he'll get a presidential pardon, and that's going to be the end of it. It's going to go a lot. And just think of it in these terms, Tom. Just think of it in these terms. Go back to the 1980s. You had a Republican president. You had a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate. You had the Iran-Contra scandal. And whatever really came of that?
Well, you know,
nothing.
Nothing. But you know, this is a filigree, and I want to explain this so that people understand, the one that listens to us.
No, we got a couple dozen anyhow.
But anyway, is that people are looking at this as it could go the right way or it could go the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Will he do the right thing or will he do the wrong thing? And I don't think that's how politicians think.
Mm-hmm.
Is they say, well, there's the right way and there's the wrong way. And, what can we make out of this on the way there, And so if we can make more out of it by going right, they might go right. And if they can make more out of it by going wrong, they might go there. Because it's the process,
right,
and what they aggrandize for themselves on the way. That's what I'm looking at.
Well, I think nothing's going to come of it. We have a Republican House, a Republican Senate,
yeah,
Republican
right.
President,
Although the polls, which we'll mention a little bit later, are going sour for the president, but you know, that's also happening to the Republicans because that goes all the way down the chain.
Right. But anyhow, my final word on this for now is I think he's gonna cop a plea. Nothing's gonna happen. This is just gonna be a much ado about nothing, unfortunately. And I hope really, Tom, as I sit here in early November, I hope I sit here and a year from now I can say I was wrong. I really do. But the cynic in me just says I'm right.
But if you are right, and it does go no place.
Yep.
And you don't hear a lot from the Democrats, not only will the issue be over, the Democrats will be over.
Yeah, they'll be dead. They will be dead
they're
in
almost,
the water.
They're just about dead now. That's why you're hearing this activity by Reid.
Right.
Because they're hearing that, hey, what's going on? They're losing. They're doing their own private polls, the ones they don't release to the press, saying that, you know, nobody respects us anymore.
Right.
Nobody trusts us.
Well, you know, we got about 9 more minutes in the segment. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit at the end of this, until the end of this segment, about Senate Majority Leader or Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada invoking the little used, and I'll be honest with you, I never heard of it, Rule 21. I never heard of it. Did you? Can you honestly say you heard of it?
I just don't look at that rule book very often.
You know, that's some good late night reading there. But you know, they not only did they catch the American public by surprise, apparently they caught most of the Republican leadership and the Republican members of the Senate by surprise.
Do you know how much cred that intern who found it got?
Yeah, they got a good job now.
Well, I was just reading here, Mr. Reid.
Really?
You're right, Tom. Let me see that.
It's probably some intern from the University of Nevada Law School, which has been in existence for about a half a dozen years. Seriously, they've only had a law school in Nevada for about a half a dozen years. They probably found that person is, they're on their way up, baby.
It's the Bob Smith School of Law. From the old Bob Newhart. It was Ed's School of Law.
Yeah, there is an Ed's School of Law down in Bakersfield.
There is?
I swear to God. You know, just as a side note, when we worked at the Daily Journal Corporation, I used to host these things for new lawyers. And I was talking to this one lady, and she was in her 60s, and she had just passed the bar, you know, so I'm at this social function. I strike up a little conversation, and I said, so, you know, where'd you go to school? And this was in Sacramento, so I was guessing she might say Lincoln Law or McGeorge or maybe one in the Bay Area. She said, and she kind of smirked and smiled and laughed. She said, I went to Ed's Law School. And I said, where? And she said, that's what they call it. It's a private law school down in Bakersfield. And, basically, it's he's got the state bar accreditation. She took it, she passed the bar, but, you know, she said, I went to Ed's Law School.
Well, you know,
that was a nickname for it. I can't recall the actual
along
name.
Along those lines, you know, going back several years, mm-hmm. There was a new law school founded in a town. I want to say this because I don't want to disparage the school because apparently it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But this, in a Northern California town, a new law school was.
Mm-hmm.
It's a university town, so there it was. They had a new law school, but it wasn't connected with the university.
Right.
No, this was connected by three attorneys
mm-hmm.
who taught school at night after they got done with work.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They didn't have no campus.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
Anyway, one of the things is, what is the difference between this and the old way of getting your law degree by reading law with a lawyer?
Oh, that's right. That's how Abraham Lincoln got his law.
Yeah, there was no difference.
He clerked.
But apparently that didn't generate enough money for the industry.
Right.
this law school, 3 years, got to have it.
Yeah. Well, in some cases,
industry.
Yeah, it is. It's a whole new industry.
So,
you're right.
They just reinvented the old way
right.
and making money.
Yeah, right. You know. Yeah, there are a few like that. Anyhow, getting back to Harry Reid and when they invoked the little-known rule, probably unknown rule, really, you could call it Rule 21, which says that the Senate will have to have a closed private session, and they did that really to talk about the they call them intelligence failures. This call them intelligence lies is really what they are.
Everybody knew what was going on.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, exactly. My perspective on this is that I was glad to see it. Nothing really substantial will come of it, but it did show that, you know, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised by Harry Reid, because here you have a guy from Nevada. He you go over in Nevada and you look at the billboards when he's running for re-election. It says Harry Reid, independent, just like Nevada, and that's kind of a plea to middle of the road and right wingers. Yeah, I thought this guy's going to be very moderate, and I guess in many ways he is.
He's another one that says Harry Reid tied to the mob, just like Nevada,
right? Just like the senator and the Godfather too, right? But you know, this guy is he's a lawyer. He's a moderate Democrat. Alleged, a moderate Democrat, and he's a Mormon too. So you know,
he must be honest.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, you put these together, and that equals this plus that plus that plus that equals conservative. Really, you know, if you think about it, that's how I view them. But at least this guy showed some spine. They're starting to show some spine. And as you alluded to when we were wrapping up our story, and what led us into this was, if the Democrats do not show some spine and some resolve on this, and we'll get to Alito probably in the next segment, they're going to be done with, because people like you and me who are who would normally vote Democrat, you know, I'll abandon them if these guys don't really, if they don't really put them to task on the Alito nomination and everything else going on. They got to really show some spine. They got to move away from this DLC, and you've convinced me that through the years. I used to be more DLC probably in the 90s. I moved away from that. But if they don't do that, if you know, and so I said, I'm glad to see Harry Reid showing some spine, because they finally, you know, they got to go on the attack.
And I got to tell you, though, is when I heard that first, I thought, oh, God, they haven't done it again. They get together, Harry Reid and whoever is his equivalent on the other side, say, well, look, you know, we need a little boost here, you know. So I'll scream, and you scream, too. We'll go in a room, have a couple of drinks, come out, you know, and say, boy, you know, both sides won.
Right. Now, the Republicans were really taken by surprise. If you heard any of the sound bites with Bill Frist, you talk about a sniveling little baby. I mean, come on. He was crying, this is a slap in the face to me. I can't take it. You know, I mean, you know, geez, that was pathetic on his part.
Well, then, if it's true, then that's great.
Yeah, I think it is true, because you could hear the anger in his voice, and this wasn't some sort of I'm shocked sort of anger. This was, I think, genuine anger, because they got it pulled on them real quick, and they were forced to talk about it, and they've at least kept the issue alive when the Republicans have been stalling on this issue, and it's good, because the Democrats are finally, it might be too late, but they're finally showing some spine. So,
great. We're going to take a break now?
Yeah, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Monday on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. And we're also heard on 106.1 FM in Salida, California on KQRP. Also, we'd like to invite you to take a look at our blog on the internet. It is located at www.ltobs.blogspot, or you can just do a Google search and type in LTOBS, and we come at the top of your queue, and we have a comment section of all our stories and postings, so we certainly invite you to take a look. We're going to take a break now, and in the next segment, I think we're going to talk about the nomination of that real nice guy, a really, really nice guy, Sam Alito, to the Supreme Court, who the Democrats want to get, or the Republicans want an up or down vote, who they always cry about. But they wouldn't give the up or down vote to Harriet Myers.
I'm glad you said it right, because the first time, a couple, three times I read his name, I kept thinking, isn't that a restaurant? Right. Oh, no, it's Alito.
Now you got me confused. I'm thinking of the restaurant down by Pier 39 in San Francisco, yeah. Right? It's Aliados, though.
Eliotos.
But former Eliotos mayor. Is a prominent political family in San Francisco,
mayor.
Too.
Former mayor. Okay. And children also act in politics.
Okay. Well, so there you have a little bit of San Francisco political history. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.